We are the ink to the page, Japan land the punch. On a monopoeable pal, we got the stuff. We know they got story, been new, they got hot. Complex narratives and black carriers, tell me where they see us. Where I see us, where I see us, they wanna be us. But tell me where they read us, not they wanna be us. Out the damn cage like a nigga from Georgia. Insane and out the brain and lacking in origin. Act flashbacks and shots to the system. Downloading new issues and sitting for a listen. Where I see us, where I see us, they wanna be us. But tell me what they read us, now they wanna be us.
They wanna be us, they wanna be us. Where I see us, where I see us, where I see us.
Where all the black people at, man?
Where I see us, where I see us.
All right, hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Where I See Me, the podcast where we look at comics and media with lots of questions in mind, mainly, where the hell are all the black and brown people? And so I'm Jamie.
And I am Marcellus.
And welcome back, everyone. We're so happy to be in season three. This is episode three of season three.
That's special.
It is special. And so I'm really excited to be talking about the topic for today. But first, Marcellus, how have you been doing? It's the end. It's the holiday season. It's Christmas time.
It's Christmas time. Happy holidays. I wish it was cold.
You know, yeah.
It's not. It's really not. It's to be honest, I don't think I don't know what I was expecting after last winter. But 80 degree weather wasn't exactly on my list. It wasn't on my bingo sheet.
And you know, someone told me it's cold in California. Go figure.
That's great. That's normal.
Go figure.
That's super normal for that to be happen.
They said this is the warmest winter on record, like across the nation. Like Colorado, the ski season started really late. Not that I ski or anything, but you know, they're talking about it on CBS this morning because the ski season, it's so upsetting for people. Apparently the first snow didn't really fall until like maybe a few weeks ago.
Oh.
Right? And we're in December. So like, what's that about? You know, is this El Nino, La Nina? Like who is here? Like what? Is it global warming? What, you know, what's happening? And then, you know, there was all those tornadoes that struck through.
Middle
of the country. I think Tennessee, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, it's a very, what does it say? I don't have any words. It's very unseasonable weather we're having. Usually there'd be more snow. Well, not in Houston. Houston, we just get ice.
Yeah, ice. And what's the, I like to think of it as, coal-like behavior.
Like the fronts. We literally just survive off a series of fronts coming.
Oh, no. I'm talking about C-O-A-L, coal-like behavior. Behavior worthy of getting coal in your stocking.
Oh.
Yeah. A coal front.
A coal front. Okay.
Yeah. But it's been too hot for people to act up too bad. So I think it's, I don't know how to feel about it.
I don't know. Do you ever remember, I don't know if in like if you've taken psychology classes, how they always give you that little like prompt or example of what causality is not, like, but the common causality, right? Which is because it's hot outside in the summer, there's the crime rate goes up because the heat makes people angry.
What?
Yeah, like that's like someone making like a causal relationship between summertime and crime. And they're like, these two things are happening simultaneously, but that doesn't mean that one causes the other. I don't remember why I brought that up, but it just made me think.
Just think December is Robin season.
Definitely Robin season. Be careful. Watch for porch pirates. Did you see that one video of that porch pirate lady? She got dragged by the car.
No,
and then, like, the getaway driver for like drove off from her, And then, like, she's laying in the middle of the street and she gets up and the person whose porch she robbed the package from, like, comes out and, like, runs after her and, like, is, like, hitting her and, like, drags her, I think, back to the house and then calls the police.
Did you know? That's too much work.
I know. It's like, girl, you did all that to steal some makeup from Sephora that came to the porch? Like, that's what you...
Yeah.
Because it just be stuff like that. Like...
You did that for a Macy's package? It wasn't even the right order?
And have you been in that store lately? Apparently, it's not that great. My mom didn't
say no,
that.
Macy's is fantastic. I'm just saying, if you got the wrong... If you got samples in the mail... versus, like... Cause I'd be shout out to Macy's, sponsor me. Macy's be coming with the deals and the fits.
I haven't been in the mall in a very like in.
See, you gotta, you can't, you don't gotta go there. You gotta go online.
Macy's online. See, I don't shop Macy's online.
Macy's online, JCPenney, any store that you're like, have I been to that store in a while? Don't physically go, because half the time the location closest to you will be disappointing. But the online has the warehouses too.
Okay. That makes sense. Because the malls, I don't, are they going to make it out of the 2020s?
The malls have had a business form of polio. They're in a wheelchair. You know, they're old enough where it's like, you shouldn't have this illness. You probably shouldn't be here for much longer. A sign of the times, but I think malls are probably going to get turned into, if we're thinking like futuristic or, you know, cyberpunk, malls are going to be turned into other spaces instead of being knocked down. Cause that's what's happening with theaters, right? Some of them get turned into other things. I've seen grocery stores. I've seen,
here in Houston, churches. Here in Houston, they have the old post office building that was downtown. It's now like this, like food and like concert hall, called Post HTX. My dad used to work at that post office because he used to ask me, he's like, "What happened to it?" Because he lives in Michigan now, so he doesn't really. I don't know. It's weird. He's weird. Shout out to my dad. I don't think he knows how to find a podcast, but he watches. He's at Michigan, but he watches the news for Houston. And I'm like, why? He was like, I gotta know what's going on down there. I'm like, okay, I guess, whatever. I'm like, if you say so. I need to call him. I haven't called him in a minute. I need to call him.
Let him know what's going on.
I know. He changed his number, so we'll see if I get through. But anyway, that's a whole nother topic. I don't know how this conversation can go today because I feel like you may be more versed in this man's filmography.
Well, I think we've seen a fair amount of his movies. I think you've seen the live all action. The ones I haven't.
Really?
Probably.
I've seen majority of the live action stuff. So I think together we can work this out. And today we're talking about this man who trends every now and then for the same reason of, you know, the lack of diversity in his casting. And who are we talking about? We're talking about Tim Burton, of course. Benjamin Button.
Yep.
I was gonna see.
I thought he was little, to be quite honest.
Really? You know, his picture doesn't look like what I thought he would look like either.
What did you think he looked like?
I thought he would look more like Edward Scissorhands. But you know, he kind of does.
If you see younger pictures of him, kind of does a little bit.
When you type in Tim Burton into a search bar, it comes up movies, memes, racist.
That's not great. That's really not good. If the third, like, if it's the fourth option, maybe that's just out of curiosity. The third one,
That's your top three. That's
your top three.
It should be
three. That's your sun, your moon, and your rising.
He rising in racism. That's what
rising in racism.
Good Lord. So, I mean, Tim Burton is from Burbank, California, born in 1958, August 25th, 1958. So I guess that makes him a Virgo. I don't know.
You said in August?
Yeah, August 25th, though. So it's late.
It'd be like a Virgo.
He's a Virgo. From Burbank, California. He has two children, Nell Burton, Billy Raymond Burton. Billy Ray?
Cyrus.
Okay. And that's all. I mean, that's all I'm going to read, really, because... And I think one of the people asked, did Tim Burton make Coraline? He did not make Coraline.
No, he did not.
Just to go ahead and clear that up for anybody who was confused.
Shout out to Leica Studios.
It feels very Tim Burton-esque. Marcel, how would you describe Tim Burton's style of films?
He is obsessed with this idea, not just specifically, I think, of like the occult, but he likes otherness, but a very specific otherness. Mm-hmm. he enjoys, I think, the scary stories you hear as a kid and likes to make some fun, accessible rendition of that. Like, that's where you get your sort of creepy, campy movies from, like Beetlejuice. You have Edward Scissorhands, this continued love affair with Johnny Depp.
Yes.
Where, because it's like you have someone who's a little off-putting, but then you have the actor for those characters be this somewhat, you know, charming man. I'm not going to pretend to know that man's actual history. I feel like it was complicated for a long time. But
Tim Burton or Johnny Depp?
Johnny Depp. But I won't, speaking to him historically, he was a 90s boy. He was that, him, Leo, a couple other people were that sort of.
Yeah.
You could do no wrong casting them in a movie because they were good.
Weren't they both in What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were.
Yeah,
right.
They were brothers. It's like, yeah,
and so there's that. He takes advantage, I think, of really solid actors. He has his favorites for sure. Oh, I think, yeah, to work with
Helen Bonham Bonham Carter.
That's his wife.
Is that his wife?
They might be divorced now. I can't remember. Either they're separated or divorced. They have two separate houses, or they did for quite a while.
That's very wisdom too. That's very Frida Kahlo and that painter man.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's how history should remember.
and Diego Rivera. I had to think about Diego Rivera. He had some cute paintings. It's okay. It's fine. Not me.
I like what he did with his paint.
Not me. Discrediting the entire legacy of Diego Rivera. I'm sorry. But only mildly sorry, because
they gave me the same.
They made him look like trash in that Frida movie, because he was just like
anything that moved,
he was on it. He was on it. Her sister. He would have slept with her mama if he could have, I'm sure. Like,
mm-hmm.
So it's just, you know, it's regardless.
But he's an odd, I think he's an interesting storyteller,
mm-hmm.
but his movies have become this very specific style. I think even the way he approaches making them, that has echoed out into other, like, visually they are very striking, like especially the animated movies. Like, yeah, they have this whether it's stop motion, which he keeps going back to, or they're this sort of animated live action, like the mm-hmm. idea of they follow the rules of animation.
Mm-hmm.
There's just this, like, you can tell it's a Tim Burton movie. I feel like part of that comes from, I'm fairly certain he went to CalArts and was there doing stuff that kind of to Disney pipeline, where he was doing storyboarding character stuff for other people. And they were like, ah, yes, good, weird Timmy. Come on. You know, you've got spunk. You've got the chutzpah. What are you going to do next? And he's been getting his Disney bag.
Yeah, because, you know, like I think I said in a couple of episodes, he directed Dumbo, which I think of all his movies doesn't quite feel like him.
It's the most corporate.
Yeah. I mean, is there there's not even really any kind of like dark undertones. I mean, other than the fact that like traveling circus, like the darkness of a traveling circus and treating people who maybe have like various medical conditions or not even as oddities. But even that, I mean, it's handled in a way that feels very like it's a Disney movie.
It's like sterilized.
Yeah, for sure.
Because the original Dumbo.
With the crows. The crows don't make no appearance.
I see. Interesting.
But the Disney was married to them crows. They really loved them crows in every movie.
They love the crows, Jim Crow, form of anthropomorphic caricatures.
And you know, they still kind of keep that tradition with like keeping, because I mean, of course, those of you listening know the crows were meant to be black people. Because it was just even the way that they were the way they talk is like that. Like white person doing an impression of a black person talk.
It's that mammy vaudeville.
It's very jive. Like, I guess it was, I had a professor once say jive talking in class. And I was like, did he go? This was when I was in Florida. And I was like, I don't like it. But I feel like I'm getting this off subject a little bit.
No.
Where were we? So you're saying he definitely probably most likely went to CalArts. I think I remember watching a documentary about Tim Burton, and if I remember it correctly, they were saying like when he was in school, the work he's making, they're like, it's creepy. They're like, why do you like he would do things that I guess were in line with the assignments, but then like his sketchbooks, the things that were happening in that. We're like more of what we're knowing him for now.
Yeah.
And so do you remember the first Tim Burton anything that you saw?
I think the first Tim Burton movie that I saw was probably James and the Giant Peach.
That's him?
Yeah.
No, what, you know what? I remember the trailers for that as a child, and I didn't want to see it because it looks weird.
Well, granted, I should say it's not directed by him.
Okay.
It's produced by him.
Okay.
So a lot of the like the way the characters are designed and stuff like that, he had his influence. I'm trying to think of how was the one that he directed though.
Oh, that was one of the first ones that you've seen?
Yeah, that was the first like Tim Burton affiliated movie I ever saw was Jane and the Giant Peach, because I loved that movie growing up.
I had like those Disney used to have like these sing along tapes in the 90s, and I used to watch those a lot. And my first interaction with anything Tim Burton was the Nightmare Before Christmas song that Jack Skellington sings when he gets to the Christmas world. And it's like the, what's this? There's magic in the air. That song. I remember that's the only little Doudrop. That was the first thing I've ever saw of him. And then I think probably Beetlejuice probably would have been like the next one, which was a lot of fun with Winona Ryder and Michael Keaton and some other people. I don't remember who else was in there, but Do you have like a favorite Tim Burton movie? This is gonna sound really weird because we're about to, you know, go into this whole tailspin about maybe him. Is he racist? Is he not racist? Yes, he is. Maybe he's not. Whatever.
Well, first to answer your other question.
Yes,
I'm pretty sure it was Corpse Bride. My first really? Movie that I saw from him, because I did see Charlie and Chocolate Factory, but they came out the same year.
Corpse Bride is 2005. Oh, I forgot about Edward Scissorhands. Okay, mate, I probably saw Edward Scissorhands before Beetlejuice, or maybe around the same time. Because this is when, you know, those movies are on TV on Saturdays. Watching.
Oh them. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so for you, James and Giant Peach and Corpse Bride. He has a long discography. I mean, I keep wanting to say discography. I'm trying to make him a musician. Filmography. So Nightmare Before Christmas, Corpse Bride, Edward Scissorhands, Beetlejuice, the remake of Alice in Wonderland, which was that for Disney? I would imagine that's for Disney.
I'm pretty sure. I think. Yeah, yeah, it's for Disney because they own that.
Okay. Then he has Batman 1989, which I didn't know he directed that one. I knew he directed Batman and Robin, which I like that movie with Uma Thurman.
Oh, the like, Ivy. Did he direct Batman? Batman Returns when it's like the, am I thinking of, what am I thinking of?
So Batman and Robin, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think, is Mr. Freeze. And Uma Thurman is Poison Ivy. Alicia Silverstone, it's the better. It's the really good one, which I think some people would argue that it's not
the one. Yeah, a lot of people will probably.
I mean, related but unrelated. Have you seen this new discourse discourse on Twitter about Halle Berry's Catwoman actually being a good movie?
Oh, I gotta be honest. I haven't seen that, probably as not to induce like a heart attack or some sort of convulsion on my part. How do you feel about Halle Berry's Catwoman?
I'm okay. I'm fine with it. Like, I think I'm fine with it. It was fun. It was fun for me when I watched it. But I think also people were saying like this movie was marketed to the wrong audience. It was marketed to white male comic fans. And yeah, it should have been marketed to girls.
Yeah. And I agree.
You know, it was like the girls, the gays, and the theys should have been marketed for this movie. Like that should have been your target audience. Cause that's the main people on the interwebs who are like dying on this hill, and they're like, yeah, this is a good movie. It's like some of the camera work maybe not so great. But this is a good movie. It's campy.
Oh, the campiness is the only thing that saves it in my mind. I think it is a bad movie that is enjoyable for many good reasons.
So wait, you've seen it or you haven't seen it?
I've seen it. Okay. I've seen it. I do not like it. but if you were to say like, oh, but like it's campy, is it fun?
It's fun.
It's fun. But I think it's a horrible movie. I think there are good things that are camp and there are bad things that are camp.
Well,
but if they manage to be camp, you can still enjoy them.
I think people struggle with what camp is. And I think like that movie didn't fully lean into the campiness all the way. But it was camp, but it didn't lean.
The parts that are there save it a little bit. But it's such a technically bad movie.
See, and that's okay. So that's, I feel like that's a very strong argument. Especially like some of the camera works when she's like doing like capoeira and like moving around.
It looks crazy.
Yes. I will definitely, the basketball scene like will literally have you dizzy. Like
it, like I think better camera work happens in, and I'm forgetting the name of the show. I want to watch more of it. Yeah. You showed it to me with, it's all Y2K, our secret agent.
Oh, Dark Angel.
Dark Angel.
But that's James Cameron. That's why. James Cameron stopped playing with them camera people. He was like, excuse me.
You better make my shit look the way I told you.
Exactly. I would love for him to revive that screenplay as a movie. Like I would live. But on the subject, okay, so a subject of campy, in the Catwoman movie being campy, the Batman and Robin movie is extremely campy. And it's, I guess that's also why it was very, it was dark, but also very colorful at the time.
That was one of the first, I mean, there are other superhero renditions, but I feel like in mainstream film, that was the first sort of like, oh, okay, let's do superhero movies. Like, we've tried it before. The only time I can think of costumes that were that colorful was like the original Superman movie, where they really put Batman in like red undies and the blue like skin tight suit.
Was that Christopher Reeves?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think so. But that one was trying to do that. No one was trying to get these suits. Let superheroes be superheroes.
Yeah, let them wear the campy like costumes and be like
Let Batman have nipples.
Batman have nipples. So he did do He did Batman Returns too. And Batman and Robin. So he did three Batman movies, which that's funny. He also did Planet of the Apes.
Yup. That's why some of the apes really look that way.
Shut up.
But he did. Yeah, I got feelings about that one.
No, he did four Batman movies. Batman Forever. Damn, he did a bunch of those Batman movies. They was really...
I'm telling you, they liked the way he did look of Batman.
I liked the way he did the Batman movies. They were fun.
Granted, I will say, when you say four, that's like in the aspect of he didn't always... I don't know if he directed all of them.
Or produced something.
Yeah, because he... Where was it? I can't remember. I'm trying to find the list of...
Of the movies? Of,
yeah, that's like reference between him directing
and
I'll have to go to his IMDb. Yeah. But no, he had a big hand in those Batman movies.
They got Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter on here as a
damn movie.
Is it good?
I did not want to see it. It was on the bottom of, it wasn't even on my list to watch it. my dad was so adamant that it was a good movie. It is genuinely such a bizarre and fun movie. Jamie, I think you might love it.
I might watch that tonight if you really trying to plug it.
I had fun with it. It's like, it's one of those things where it sounds like, I didn't want to watch it because it sounded like a movie you'd see advertised in a movie. And it was. It was exactly like that, but with some okay actors. Mm-hmm. And it was funny. Okay. It was just absurd. It took itself seriously and delivered the world where Abraham Lincoln is really just out here on vampires. That's his soul. Like, he still becomes president, but that's his part.
This is pre-president Abraham. Oh, yeah. Okay.
This is the rise.
I might watch that. Because this shit look real stupid.
Also, it is. It's great, though. It's
one of my favorite stupid-ass movies that he made, Mars Attacks. I didn't know he made Mars Attacks. Dumbass movie. I just remember the lady and the chihuahua like switching heads. Like the aliens took her head off and put it on the chihuahua's head. I was like, why? It was like, why do aliens look like that?
It's too much.
I might watch that or Abraham Lincoln tonight. I don't know. I gotta rewatch some stuff. But he has a really long... I almost said discography again. Filmography. And I don't know about you, but would you say, I mean, so like, would you say there's, I mean, from what you remember of the movies that you've seen, are there a lot of people of color in these movies? And by people of color, I mean like people who, yeah. People of color. I was about to make a distinction of like darker. Yeah, actually, yeah. Darker skinned people, regardless of if they're Black, Indian, what have you.
Every time I think, oh, is this Tim Burton movie have like black people in it or like a darker complexion person? Mm-hmm. I remember that it is not a Tim Burton movie. It is like another studio. Like, oh, well, what about? Oh, no, that's Coraline. Oh, well, what about? Oh, no, that's also like a studio. That's Kubo. James the Giant Peach had. No, it didn't. What about Beetle? No, that was all. That was no. What about Frank and Weenie? What? Nope. No, that wasn't. Oh, Paranorm. That's also like a studios. Okay. Damn. Nope. They was all dead people. Yeah. So it's like there's not like there's all these films that have. I think you can't even, I think he gets away from this idea of representation by just working with either all strange looking casts mm-hmm. of characters. Like maybe they're all bugs or all ghosts or all right. demons. And so he gets away with like, well, why do we need to talk about diversity in this story? Which I'm not saying you need a whole story to be about diversity, but when it comes to the way he describes his storytelling and his visions, it's like they're quirky and dark and offbeat, and you sympathize with these outsiders, mm-hmm. but he never, like, I'm pretty sure I have a quote from him or someone talking about his work.
You know, I had to Google and see if he did the Addams Family movies. Because, I can definitely feel like he grew up probably watching the Addams Family, the TV show in the 60s and 70s and the Munsters. Because
I found the exact quote, because you're not far off.
And like Elvira and like all of that, like definitely seems like he was Tales from the Crypt, that kind of stuff. But what's the quote?
He was asked and acknowledged the diversity question mm-hmm. That's been hovering around him. And he told, I think it was for like the Washington Post or no, it might have been for another similar like well-established journal. And he said that things either call for things or they don't. And then he kept talking, and he said he remembered when he was a child watching the Brady Bunch. Mm-hmm. And he said then they started to get all politically correct. Like, okay, let's have an Asian child and a black. I used to get more offended by that than just, I grew up watching blaxploitation movies, right? And I said, that's great. I didn't go like, okay, there should be more white people in these movies. So you see what I mean? Like he's Ooh. Saying essentially.
He likes segregation in his movies.
A little bit. At least a little bit, if not a lot. So there's all this room for characters like this mm-hmm. and I think it's hard for his argument, it doesn't stick.
No.
And then if you're even going to go further to say, okay, live action is harder for him to argue that because people just exist,
right?
But even in animation, I think you brought up Coraline as being a thing that gets commonly, people think it's his mm-hmm. It can't be because he has like, well, one, there's a black character. Do you have people of different like mm-hmm. geographical backgrounds? Like, I can't think of a single Tim Burton movie where you do actually get people from different countries.
No, he tends to focus on suburbia. Like this, and I don't really know much about Burbank, California, other than like I would see that as an address for stuff sometimes. Related to like movies.
Suburbs.
Yeah, like
a lot of suburbs. Okay. Cookie, the like little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky tacky. Okay. Like,
Okay, shout out. I miss Weeds. I used to love that show.
It's very, you can think of Weeds. You could think of any show you've seen about California, where you kind of get that identical houses. The teens rebel. Mm-hmm. That's where he's coming from.
It's interesting because it's like, well, is it interesting? It's not interesting. I should stop using the word interesting when I don't have a word. I understand what he's saying, right? And I understand that he probably grew up in a space where he didn't see a lot of Black people, a lot of Asian people. And his movies do come from that perspective of a white person growing up in suburbia. And, you know, I don't know what it's like to be white in suburbia, but like, you do get the sense of like, his movies wanting to disrupt the repetition of like visual repetition of where they live, the monotony of the day to day, all of these milestones people are supposed to make, like, you know, all of this kind of stuff. But it's like, where were, like, he was born in 58. So he's kind of close in age to my mom. And I don't think my mom, I'm trying to think, like, I don't know. Segregation was still happening, but I don't know how segregation was handled in the West, in California.
Well, I mean, not great. I'll say that much. I mean, you have this history in the West Coast, right? Like the Japanese and internment camps. You have the sort of the disconnect of Rodney King. I'm not thinking of segregation specifically, but like Rodney King. You have Watts.
Also, I mean, even if you go back further, right? Like, there was, I was listening to these two artists talk about their work. One of them, I believe they're both Vietnamese artists, but they were talking about the Chinese Exclusion Act. In the early, I believe it was like 1800s, right? Where they were like, we're not letting any more Chinese people into the country. And they were coming, you know, by way of the Pacific, by way of California. And so you had Chinese people pretending to be Mexican so that they could come, or like trying to pass themselves as Mexican, trying to stay in California. There's a lot, California has a very rich, diverse, problematic history, just like all the other states in the U.S. And I feel like, you know, his work is built, like, all of that stuff is in the background. Like, it's not.
Oh, yeah.
It's the bone. It's the dirt in which he's built his house of suburbia on. Like, all those things are there. Right. Like, if you have to know them, and the fact that he's not. He doesn't seem to be interested in history per se.
No, he doesn't want to know what creates the suburb.
No, that's the thing. Like, he wants to critique the suburb, but he's not interested in how it came to be. Mm-mm. Which I think is a problem. Like, how do you critique something and not want to assess its origins? Like, how do you, you know, how does that work?
It don't
work. Like, you got to look at multiple sides. Like, your critique is going to be faulty, I would say. And I think that, you know, his movies have not really survived the current critics, who are all trying to be more politically correct, right? Sometimes to political correctness, I think it has, I feel like it's come like a very negative term for both. Yeah. I think for both conservative people and liberal people, and everyone in between. Like, I think most people kind of have negative feelings about it, because sometimes it feels, for conservatives, they feel like it's doing too much. And then for maybe people who are liberal, they feel like it's performative. Like, it's not actually, you know, like, it's not at, like, you're just putting this Black person here because they need a Black face there, not because this person is actually going to serve a function and do something, right? In which, you know, I don't know. I feel like with Tim Burton, like, I'd much rather him, I don't know, if you're not going to give a Black person, like, a really meaningful role in your movie, then don't put them, like, don't put them in there just to have a Black person in the in there. Maybe, yeah. I don't know. I feel like
no, that's what he's saying, essentially. That's what he said.
Uh-huh. But I still.
But I the issue I've, at least in my opinion, I think the issue and the biggest critique of him mm-hmm. that I can think of in terms of that argument, because mm-hmm. that's a valid argument. If you can't imagine a Black person just doing whatever your character's doing, mm-hmm. I think that's the core issue.
Yeah.
Like, James and the Giant Peach to me was a movie I loved growing up. Like, I know he only produced on it. But it, you know, it's got the Tim Burton-esque, you know, it's part of him is in there with that story, mm-hmm. the way it's out. That little boy could have easily been a little Black boy.
True.
You got an orphan mistreated. You got a whole crux of characters, a really big imagination. Did it really happen? Yes, no. And it could have just been, like, I feel like you had, it's the same, and I could be, this
no,
might be.
No, I'm having this thought in my mind while you're talking that that's what my face is doing. I'm not.
The Blues Brothers? Yeah, I was about to say, the Blues Brothers, right?
Uh-huh.
A lot of people love the Blues Brothers. It is just two Black characters and white actors are playing them, right? It's there's this like, and I'm taking this phrase from a book I read by Ed Guerrero, Framing Blackness, mm-hmm. where he critiques the Blues Brothers and says that it is just neo minstrelsy.
Ooh, yeah.
Because you have these characters surrounded by Blackness. Not that, you know, gospel and jazz and the blues are exclusively Black, but you have these very, they almost don't talk. They exude these very specific mannerisms, dancing around. Mm-hmm. They're going against the law. There's these trickster type archetypes. Mm-hmm. And they represent, they're going to save a Black church. Like, there's this whole... Yeah, they save a church in one of the movies.
I know who the Blues Brothers are. Like, I remember the image of those two white men in them suits with them sunglasses. But I didn't watch.
They save a church where James Brown is the like the choir leader.
Hush.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's this whole thing in those types of characters where I feel like a lot of times Black culture or struggles that are not universal, like you don't commonly see like just white children or white characters experiencing them. Mm-hmm. They'll adopt like, oh yeah, I feel like I've known someone who's gone through this. This could have been anyone.
Right.
But white people get the underdog. They get the, you know, the wronged. You don't often see a Black or brown character as the wronged character in any sort of like animated or for children film.
Oh, I have three things from what you've just said, and they're probably going, none of them are freaking related to each other, but it's okay.
Oh, it don't matter, not at all.
Soon as you were talking about James and the Giant Peach and that little boy could have been a Black boy, I thought yeah. about Life of Pi and that Indian boy and that tiger. Lost at Sea, because don't they get lost at sea on that with the peach?
They do. And I was like, a fantastic film.
Like, are those two movies not? Are those two books? I know Ronald Dahl did James and the Giant Peach. That's his book. Yeah. I don't remember who wrote Life of Pi, but I'm like, are these two things? Because I haven't seen either.
I mean, they're not the same. But I think
the imagery to me, right? Like in a weird circumstance.
I think that part of it, the way the journey unfolds, very similar. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of like the bones of a story of like a boy learning and trying to survive and being given this opportunity, you know, connecting with characters along the way. Like the imagination is there. Mm-hmm. But that's what I mean, right? Because it doesn't, everyone loved that movie too. Like Life of Pi was... the book like got resold to a new print mm-hmm. because the movie was so successful.
Yeah. Okay.
You're absolutely right. There's like so
I was like, are these two things?
There's some difference, but I mean it's also the same thing of like there's what, like seven stories, right? And people are retelling the same stories. But if you know what you're doing, you can do it well.
So I forgot the third thing, but maybe it'll come back to me. But the second thing, when you were talking about, like, I don't know, something about what you said made me, have you ever seen Madonna's music video for Like a Prayer?
Yes. Yes. I have.
I teach that in my class. We watch that video, and I have my students critique that music video because there's something about what you said that immediately came to mind, right? With her being the savior of this Black man who was Leon. I think Leon Robinson is his name. Leon played, I think he was in the Five Heartbeats. I want to say in the Five
Heartbeats.
In the Five Heartbeats. He was in something else too, but he was a really big
deal. I love that movie.
He was a big deal. If you have not seen Madonna's Like a Prayer, honey, how she has still has a career. The girl has made a career off controversy.
Oh yeah,
she in her 60s still causing controversy. But in the music video, like Madonna, I think it's because we were talking about the church, right? Like the Black church being there, and like Blackness is definitely used as a prop for Madonna to be uplifted, to save someone. Right. Like it's this true performance of allyship that's super performative. Right. Like she doesn't do the right thing in the beginning, which is to tell the police she witnessed who actually committed the crime. Right. She waits till they arrest Leon and then goes in the church and prays to Saint Martin the Porous, which is confusing for a lot of people because people assume that that's Black Jesus and not Saint Martin the Porous. A lot of my students confuse it too, and I think their confusion is valid because it is not clear, right? And especially if you're not Catholic, you're not going to be familiar with the Catholic pantheon of saints, because they got a bunch of them, and it's one at least
a pantheon worth.
It's one for every occasion. You got a headache, there's a saint for that. Like it's a saint for everything. I kid you not. If you didn't know. But you know, like just, and then the most, I feel like the most controversial scene for me in present day is her dancing in front of them burning crosses.
Yeah, I gotta be honest. I'm almost positive they went, hey, you sure about this one? And she said, light them up.
Light them up. That's exactly what she said. I heard it word for word. I saw the behind the scenes footage. That's what she said. That's what she said. You know, most people, you know, in the 80s, the controversy was the interracial kiss, Jesus being depicted as Black. The burning crosses, I think, were kind of maybe a little bit in the background. But it's girl, what is you doing? What is this? Like, what is going on here on this day?
Too much.
Like, what is this?
Too much.
I don't remember how that related. I think you were talking about the Blues Brothers, but like characters being enveloped in Blackness, like white characters being enveloped in white and Blackness, and them just kind of like getting to navigate freely through this. They're uplifted. Yeah. They're the savior of these Black people.
And you can give them these not inherently Black qualities, but you can apply Black struggles to them. Mm-hmm. And because of their whiteness, they are impervious to the true repercussions. Mm-hmm. Or the very, like, it's, they do it all the time. And it's part of why, I mean, you gotta stop before I go on a rant.
Go on a rant, do it.
Because I have a whole, I've told you about this before. I have a whole 15 or 16 page PowerPoint, like a proper presentation on racism through anthropomorphic animals.
Oh, I do remember you talking about this. This is important. It's important.
It ties into the idea of the whole concept of like neo-minstrelacy, mm-hmm. because Blackness is intangible. Mm-hmm. That's why you can't, you know, my Blackness is no more less Black than your Blackness. Mm-hmm. But because it's intangible, that means if someone has an idea of like a caricature of Blackness, And it's like, whether it's wrong or right, which, you know, it's a caricature. So it's, there's going to be some small bit of like, I once saw a black person do this. Mm-hmm. So it's, they blow it up and they can apply it to any character and just embed it. Like it's this racist golem for them to just like act out. So there's all these, like the Blues Brothers, you have the Crows, you have, they're the same thing. Like I feel like a lot of these, and I think the reason that Tim Burton feels good about himself is because he's not making the Crows, but he's allowing for characters to have struggle. And I think that's enough for him. Like he's adopting these situations where it could easily be anyone, but because he's not, you know, making a black caricature evident in the work, like there's no the, but to be honest, he can't really, that's how he feels about it. But what's Nightmare Before Christmas? Oogie Boogie is his crow. Like he doesn't feel that because it doesn't look like a black person, he's fine.
And you know, I've heard people say that, I remember someone saying that like it's Boogie was like a slur towards black people. White people came up with so many different slurs for black folks. I can't keep up with them all. Like it's, but I think it was something like, there's something.
Oogie Boogie is a derogatory term that came out of the South.
Yeah. I've never heard anyone refer to that. I've heard an assortment of other things, but I did see someone writing about like how that character is racist. I also saw that this woman who I follow. Oh, God. What happened?
I'm sorry. I looked up why Oogie Boogie looked like that.
Why does it look like that?
So apparently,
share your screen. I can't see it.
Oh, you're right. I need to share. Look at us. We can, and you too could see the screen if you were a patron of the Where I See Me podcast.
You sure could. And we've got fun things coming out in the new year. We've got a loyalty program with Patreon, so you can get interesting, cool, Where I See Me swag. All right. You're showing me your screen. How Hocus Pocus, where the cast of Hocus Pocus is today. They all doing stuff. Jack was burned alive. This Tumblr author posited. Oh, okay. I see. Never mind.
So it's like it's they're theorizing, but
Oogie Boogie was skinned alive, which is why he's just a burlap sack with insects for innards, and Zero the dog was electrocuted.
But see, the thing that caught my eye about this was I forgot he has bugs inside of him.
That just makes me think of like Strange Fruit.
That's so, that was really my irritation at that, was like, first of all, it's burlap sack, bug filled man voiced by a black man. And he made all these choices.
He did make these choices.
So, you know, it's just,
look, I don't think if you've been listening for the past like 45 minutes, you know, we're not defending him at all. But really, but I feel like we're really trying to carefully sort through weigh through the chaos of his films. Like we're like in a waist deep pool of slime and stuff, trying to make sense of this, of his filming choices. I understand what he's saying, but I don't think it doesn't hold, like, you can't make movies like that anymore. And at the time period when he's making in the 80s and 90s, like, the critics were not thinking about any kind of representation. Like, it was it was more like trying to do separate but equal type shit, I think, within the film. Which is what he was trying to say when he was like, oh, when I watched Blaxploitation, I didn't think a white person had to be in it. right? Oh, this movie would be so much better with a white person in it, right? But that's what he's talking about separate but equal film, like art forms. And I just think, like, it's lazy. I feel like it's lazy. It's real lazy.
Oh, it's very lazy. extremely lazy.
I want us to switch gears and think about, so of course, everybody has made some kind of, you know, we're probably late to having a commentary on Tim Burton. People have been talking about him for years. But there has been, I think, like on TikTok and Twitter and whatever, on the social medias with the platforms of the people. People going back and forth about whether, you know, there's, so one of the things was like people saying, oh, well, Black people couldn't be in these movies because like he likes for people to look dead and like gaunt and pale. And somebody was like, so Black people don't die? Is that what you say? Is that what you say? It's like Black people don't die. Or y'all don't know what happens to a dark skinned body when it, okay. Is that, and also like, is that really the case you want to make? Like that's the real argument. Mind you, these are the arguments of the people, not Tim Burton. And then you, so of course you then have people who will go and put on the Corpse Bride-esque makeup on their brown skin and just prove like, yeah, we could be in these places, but y'all don't want to put. And then you have other people who are like, oh, y'all, he has told us he don't want us in his movies. So why are y'all pandering to this shit? Like, what are y'all doing? Yeah, it doesn't. Like, why do you want a seat at a table that was not built for you? So, you know, you have an assortment of arguments happening online. Have you seen any of these arguments or like have any thoughts?
I've seen the cosplayers mm-hmm. do their renditions. Like, I think I saw the Corpse Bride one specifically. It's a double-edged sword because if... I feel like it was a nicer way of saying it, but if Tim Burton didn't do fuck all with his career, like if no one saw his work and people were doing the arguments, it'd be like, this is a waste of time. Right. Like but because he is an iconic director mm-hmm. and holds weight mm-hmm. and that his work is still... Like even though his choices don't hold up, the quality of the animation and the films does. Mm-hmm. It's hard because you can't just exclude. And I feel the same way about most directors that are controversial or have like problematic ways of approaching the way they make work. You can't just not watch their work, mm-hmm. and you can't just not talk about them. Because it limits your ability to make better choices mm. or to be able to like digest and understand, okay, well, why is the thing that you think is good filmmaking, good storytelling, why is it good? Like it pains me. And this is maybe a hot take.
What? A hot take?
And I don't feel good. I didn't feel this way in the past. But I think... Especially if you are able, like if you feel conflicted, and a lot of people be like, don't put your money towards people who do XYZ. Mm-hmm. Y'all, it is 2021. If you don't want to give someone your money, watch the movie in a way that doesn't give them money. That's all we're
saying. That's not a hot take.
Because there's people who they don't want to, like, they're like, I horrible, creepy man. See, now I'm forgetting his name. No, it was made Annie Hall.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, I don't remember his name. That makes me a bad filmmaker.
It's Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
He's
the little Jewish man with the glasses.
Yeah, yes, he is.
I want to say Jerry. It's not Jerry.
Woody Allen. So. People, there's whole, and I didn't watch a lot of Woody Allen movies for a long time for that same reason, because that man married his daughter.
He sure did.
And I was like, I can't support weirdo dude like that. That's creepy. Boy, does he make some great movies. And you can separate art from the artist, I think, only in a monetary sense. You really gotta... if you can feel conflicted, but I think it's worth watching work that is should be critiqued. You should be able to, but you just gotta find, I think really finding your access is the only means of separating from an artist. So I think it's hard when people want to have those conversations where it's like, why are you giving your time and energy to this? Because I mean, those animated movies, those stories are like, they're full of something. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the director's a little full of shit, but like they're full of something good to some extent. I mean, a whole crew of people worked on it.
I think, you know, sometimes when you go back and watch things through a different lens, you're like, what the hell is this?
Oh, for sure.
I tried to watch, I had never seen Nightmare Before Christmas. I told you I only seen a little like dance sequence, you know the word. The little the little sing-along thing, right? I tried to watch it one morning. Why I want to start my morning with a Nightmare Before Christmas, I don't know. I guess because, I know why. Because ColourPop Cosmetics has been pushing this Nightmare Before Christmas eyeshadow palette on me for the past month and a half. Talking about buy this. Yeah. All my ads been ColourPop. They probably gonna be hitting me up after this, we record this thing. They've been
talking about Jamie.
It's the Nightmare Before Christmas palette. And I'm like, what? They also got a Lizzie McGuire palette. I was like, wait a minute. Y'all need to calm down. I tried to watch Nightmare Before Christmas. I didn't make it 15 minutes. I was bored. I was incredibly bored. I'm like, what? It's so slow. I mean, it's like if he don't get to the Christmas world and kidnap Santa already, I'm just, No. If he don't hurry up, what is all this? What is this? And then Sally running around from them, trying to escape from that man and like leaving her arms and stuff around. It's like, girl, literally pull yourself together. Like, girl, what? What is this? I mean, Sally's kind of interesting. I think she gives me Sally and Course Ride kind of seem like they go hand in hand. But yeah, child, I tried to watch it. I did not make it. I couldn't make it. I was like, this is bored. Why am I doing this to myself? I'm not watching this. I was like, I can't do it. I haven't seen Corpse Bride either, but I watched, there's a YouTuber named John Solo. I was going to call him Han Solo, who does the messed up, he has a series called The Messed Up Origins. And so he did the origins of Corpse Bride. And apparently it's based on a Jewish folklore about like a young man who goes out in the forest, puts a wedding ring on a tree and the tree comes alive and is like, we're married now, bitch. You're my husband. Basically, I guess, which happens in the Tim Burton movie. Is it a tree?
Yeah. I think he thinks it is like a branch, but it is in fact like a
finger.
Yeah.
Of the lady. It's like, that's what your ass get. Playing wedding in the forest with your friends. That's what you get. Mm-hmm. That's really what you get. But the folklore behind it, I think, is really fascinating, which we have a problem. Earlier I stated that Tim Burton doesn't seem to be interested in history. If he's not interested in history, then why is his ass pulling from a Jewish folklore from like the old country? So we got, it's problems, right? Like you can pull from history, like folklore stuff that are from very specific cultures, but you can't fully investigate suburbia and its origins and why it looks the way it is.
Sorry, Frank can't do it. Not gonna be able to do it.
I don't like it. In the words of Carisha, I don't like that. I don't play like that. I don't like that at all.
It's very selective.
It is.
It's very, very selective. And in a way that's transparent.
Yeah. Is he Jewish?
I think. Hey Siri, is no, let me
I mean she couldn't
sorry. I didn't quite catch that.
Siri, you better hush.
I was like, she could have made an appearance. Well, we have had to pay Apple for featuring her.
That's why I was like, hold on, let me not. Okay.
Like, girl. Girl, don't be talking out loud.
The first thing I typed, when I typed in Tim Burton Jewish, it just says Jewish erasure in Tim Burton films. Oop,
okay, never mind then.
it starts off with the Corpse Bride in the cover of it.
Right, because it's a Jewish story. It's a Jewish story. Like, how do you babes, how do you erase Jewish people from their own folklore? Folklore. I promise y'all I can speak English. Wow. I knew it. His ship don't be matching up. It don't be matching
What's
up.
What's going on?
So
I'm looking, because every time I look up anything about this man, it's just so it's so la-di-da. Like, he grew up cookie cutter, suburban, white picket fence, Protestants. They weren't dedicated Christians. You know, they go to church. I guess he's stated as, you know, their insincerity made him be like, yeah, whatever.
Wow.
to the whole, so he's like a Democrat. He's kind of like with religion, you're sort of with politics. But like, he's like, he'll let you know he voted for Obama. But
that's only about, to say that he's not a racist.
Yeah, that's about as far as that goes.
He tired of y'all calling him a racist, but it's like, baby, you couldn't, like, I think the argument really is, right, like, and you had really valid points. We've been saying, I understand what he's saying. Do I like it? No. Do we agree with it? No. But I understand what he's saying. And you brought up the point that because of how notable he is as a director, that he can't just bury his head in the sand with his choices anymore. Like, at a certain point, you really do, like, once you have more responsibility as a director, it does become, which is, I mean, you know, as a creative person, as an artist, like, that is tricky, right? Like, the more notoriety you achieve, the more responsibility you have to do right by the people you're depicting or the stories you're telling.
That's platform.
Exactly. Like, you can't just be like, oh, well, after a certain while, especially as someone who, he's been making movies as long as I've been alive. So at least 33 years. You know, at this point, he should be able to, you know, make a movie that deals with our world. And even this is the thing, his movies are dated in the sense of, like, they're stuck in a very particular part of suburbia. Like, Edward Scissorhands is like 1950s, but not.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's 1950s, but like /80s kind of thing. In it. Like, he's stuck in a very particular time period, which maybe he makes some people think, like, oh, this is during segregation, so we're not going to see Black people in our suburban neighborhood. Like, that's one argument I can see people making, right? As to why. But that shit don't really, like, you can't.
And he even tries to use location, I think, as an excuse.
It's not.
Like Beetlejuice. Well, this town is in the middle.
Where was Beetlejuice? Because they drove off a cliff. Where's the?
It looks like the Midwest.
There's a cliff in the Midwest. Like, are there cliffs?
I mean, depending on where, depending.
It was like, where are there cliffs? No, they drove off a bridge.
Yeah, they drove off like a bridge over
over like a little stream or some shit.
A little ravine,
Which, that was wild. They drove off that bridge, then walked home and thought
Connecticut.
Good lord. There are Black people in Connecticut. I know, like,
there are Black people
everywhere. Yes. We're everywhere. was wild that they drove off that bridge and walked home
to avoid hitting a dog.
It's like, then they walked home and was thought they were still alive. Like, baby, y'all been dead for a good minute. Y'all been real dead for a while. Bless their hearts. They thought they did something, though, I guess. The dog was saved.
I guess. Dogs'
lives matters, I guess. I don't know.
Dogs' lives matter.
But I think ultimately, I don't know. I feel like I'm in the camp of, I think it's important to critique notable works by artists that are like held in such high regard, because to just consume them mindlessly, I think, is problematic. And so I think like the criticism is fair, it's warranted, it's necessary, it's healthy. Criticism is really healthy to do. I feel like I am of the camp of, I'm not like gonna sign a petition for Tim Burton to put Black people in his movies. I'm not like, I mean, he don't want us in his movies, though. Okay, that's your choice. You're losing out by having more, like a richer storytelling experience by having something that reflects the actual world you live in. But that's you. You want to be,
because it's not like we're asking, like, all right, Tim Burton, you need to direct the next Proud Family's movie.
Wow.
Like, there's no, like, all right, where's the PG, the PJs
coming up? I love the PJs. That was fun.
And no, they're fantastic. No, they're fantastic. I think all is fantastic, but it's not like asking, like, Steven Spielberg to direct the next Tyler Perry movie.
You know Tyler would never fly for that shit. Tyler would be making his movies in 2 days.
He'd be 2 days. He opens and closes a set like a Spirit Halloween.
Yes. He really does.
He be doing it well, though, because they'd be in and out.
With the bad wigs.
Everyone have bad wigs except him.
I know. Madea got a full lace front.
Oh, closure, yeah.
Like, full. I don't know all the. I watched the wig videos, but I don't know all the. The closure.
The wig is wigging.
It's wigging.
It's always the wig.
The wig, yeah. Her wig.
Not the wigs.
The wig. Her wig. That salt and pepper wig, it is putting in the work. Okay? It is putting in the work. Everybody else's wig be looking like they got this shit from Party City.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like. It's a Party City wig. They got it off of AliExpress, off Wish.com.
There are takes where the wigs change direction.
You sure are.
I mean, fighting for their life.
But I get what you're saying. No one's asking him to direct those things. And it's like, you know, you may like his aesthetic, but are there other people who do creepy shit like that? Like who are people of color? Like, I feel like you can get, not necessarily that you want to do like a different, like a Black version of Tim Burton, but like if there's certain like creepy aesthetic, like he didn't invent that shit, right? No. Like he's just really perfected his own style, but like other people can do creepy too, like, you know, like go find another director, like just leave his little ass alone. Like he in Burbank wanted to make movies about suburbia that don't even exist no more. Like
he's a part of that sort of class of I can't want to say era, but I think like a specific sort of year of directors where there haven't been replacements yet, because we don't really, like every once in a while you'll see someone who's like, oh, there's that new director, and they have a name. Like you, I feel like that's happening with like Ryan Coogler, right? You have people who are coming up where it's just like, oh, there's that person. Mm-hmm. Most times people just get excited for the movies. Kind of like they used to, like, oh, it's just this movie coming back, or they like series, franchises, characters, or actors. Sometimes I think they're very specific directors, depending on how committed you are to being like, oh, I want to see their new movie. Like a Wes Anderson is probably the newer generation a little bit, not by that much. He's still, he's, not much younger than Tim Burton at this point, but we need those. We need the new directors.
Yeah.
Because whether or not, you know, they think they're more progressive, they are going to reflect a time period that is what they grew up in. I think we need them 90 babies.
Yeah.
Them late 80 babies to come in. I don't think we need someone born in 58 showing us what other looks like. Being a predominant voice.
Yeah.
To show us otherness, because Burbank, California is not the capital of strange.
No, it's not.
It's far, far from
it. I want somebody who grew up in Roswell, New Mexico to make sci-fi films.
10,000%, there's someone there doing it.
There has to be.
There's got
to
be.
There has to be. It's like, I've never been there, but just how weird, like, this entire town is dedicated to the possibility of an alien crash land, like an alien spaceship crash landing, like a crash site. You know, like, that's, I feel like that, like, what does that do to a person, like, growing up in that environment? Like, what is it like? And you don't even have to have any aliens in that shit. Just, you know, make a movie about growing up in Roswell and what that's like. We don't even have to really see, like, the shit is sci-fi in itself, because the science and the fiction is all around you, like, in your environment.
I feel like some of the places where you're seeing directors of color start to emerge, mm-hmm. in places like this, it specifically is animation.
Mm.
Like Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. Not both of them, but I think at least one of the directors, I'm forgetting his name. I know his first name is Phil. But the director for that, he's produced other films that are sort of that idea of, you know, anyone can be great, or like the weird, the other, the family aspect. Mm-hmm. Thinking about TV, shows like OKKO. I know it's an older show now, but that came out of that. So there's a whole, I think, like Cartoon Network, mm-hmm. has a whole series of people where it's like Adventure Time created all these other people who, they worked on Adventure Time, mm-hmm. and then they branched out and made their own show. That's one of those creators that came out of that network. Like, there's all these people who are doing work under successful directors from like 2010s and 2000s, mm-hmm. and now they're getting chances to make their own work in their own films. And they're starting to pop up slowly.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's going to look like in film, mm-hmm. but TV, it looks like it's starting to happen.
That's exciting.
Like Craig of the Creek.
I've heard of Craig of the Creek.
Craig of the Creek is so beautiful. It's one of my favorite depictions of a Black family on television.
Mm.
It almost makes me think of like a wholesome PBS version of the Bernie Mac show.
Really? And Bernie Mac show was good.
At times. Because like it's from the kid's perspective. That's why I think it makes it softer. But they show his whole family, like cousins and stuff like that. They be doing hairstyles correct. They be showing like Black people at rest.
That is
right.
That is an important thing to see. Black people just living and just
like, we not picking up swords.
You not about to have a heart attack from trying to explain racism to your coworkers. Like that other show.
Yep.
They're in their final season. Blackish. It's the final season of Blackish. It's time. It's got to go.
I'd rather have reruns of the Bernie Mac show.
Same. Him like, listen, America, you got to be tough on these kids.
Now, I don't told you what I need to tell them. I told them for one time.
Sometimes, I don't know what it is. There's something about, like, there's some, like, comfort shows. Like, things that I'll gravitate back towards. Like, The Nanny is definitely a comfort show. Just because I'm like, all the outfits. I'm like, the outfits. And
you know what?
What?
Sorry.
You know what?
No, you, I'll hold the thought.
I mean, please, my other, I was just saying, my other comfort show is the New Adventures of Old Christine. And like, I think Wanda Sykes started as like the writer on the show, but then she became a character on the show. And she's just like, these people are crazy. These white people are crazy. Like, that's literally her perspective the whole time. She's Christine's best friend. And Christine is just like a horrible person. She's horrible person. My friend Joseph used to always say that he feels like, because Julia Louis-Dreyfus went on to do Veep after that show, which I haven't watched that. I need to watch it. He was like that her role as Christine prepared her for Veep. I was like, really? He was like, yes. So I keep saying I'm gonna watch it, but I have yet to do it. But what were you going to say? Because we need to wrap up soon.
Speaking to circling back to this idea of like specificity.
Yeah, you said it.
Specificity. Yeah, you got it. In telling stories, especially when it's like video and film, whatever it's TV, I feel like there's a whole nother conversation, but the idea of whiteness on screen interacting with like others in terms of whether it's black, brown, other cultures and ethnicities, and sort of like, because you can get to a whole conversation on Judaism and the Jewish people and stuff like that. There's a whole complex conversation about that that I'm not going to try to even enter. But seeing Fran Drescher next to like this fancy, rich white man is its own, like very, very purposefully, like this is a white British man. Mm-hmm. Like as far removed from Queens and anywhere she's from as possible, to make her the other, and have those characters exist. You know, they get her style, they have her voice invade the space. There's all these things where, I don't know, just the idea of like shows like that where you have other is available, and it's not just like I love Malcolm in the Middle. That family is the other in that environment, but they're still just white middle class people. Like they're not really breaking any molds. Those kids were just, they were like some rebel rouser kids. They was causing actual problems.
Those kids seem like the kids you've seen that running around the grocery store, like to me, basically. Like that's
And that's not a marginalized group. No.
That's a bunch of them.
But the show is funny, I think, just because it's very, I think, honest in terms of like, that's what that kid might be like. But here's their day. Here's the problems they might have at home. But
you know, another show I think kind of tried to do something similar, but wasn't as like, I think, dirty as Malcolm in the Middle. The Middle. Did you ever see that?
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say The Middle.
You psychic. The
Middle is absolutely like an updated version of Malcolm in the Middle. They tried to be cleaner, but that's not clean.
No, it's just
those little kids would be running around saying like, fuck you, I hate you, all these other things. There is no well-behaved mess.
No, you gotta let mess be messy. Cause the kid,
that's why I like the nanny. Nanny just be happening.
You know, and like, I, you know, what makes it so, like, her Jewish culture is so prominent in the show, right? Like, there's certain words. There's even an episode where they go to, like, the synagogue, and, like, she takes the two girls with her, and, like, the oldest girl, Maggie. Maggie's the oldest one. Maggie's like, she's like, Fran, I thought you said it's traditional to have Chinese food at temple. And she's like, be quiet. She's like, that's after temple. After temple, we go to the Chinese restaurant. Like, you know, like there's certain, and I remember years later, maybe like a couple of years ago, reading an article about, you know, what do other people do on Christmas who are not Christian? And like, I think if I'm not mistaken, it's like a tradition for a lot of Jewish people go to Chinese restaurants on Christmas because they're open. Because Chinese people don't celebrate Christmas. Well, some Chinese people don't. There's definitely like a Chinese Baptist church in Houston. So, you know, there's lots of different people.
But thinking of like what businesses might be open to serve people who don't yeah. commit to the predominant.
And you know, I need, that's the thing, like I want more. I think ultimately with all of this with Tim Burton is that, yes, I think the stories are interesting, but I feel like we need more stories that are diverse. Like he's in his little lane. He doesn't want to deal with his own biases and things like that. He can go sit in the corner and do that. Like that's, go handle yourself. But in the meantime, I just feel like there needs to be more opportunities for directors of color. Like you're saying, there's a lot of them starting to pop up, but also the storytelling needs to be more diverse as well. We always get a damn New York story. Every show is set in New York. And like, no disrespect to New York as a state, but like, y'all not the only state. Like, y'all not the only You're state. Not. Like, why don't we know anything about like the Appalachian Mountains and the people who live there? Why is there no show about them?
I don't even know who they are.
Why is there no show about like living in the Sea Islands? Especially with like everything that's happening there right now, right? With with the like developers coming in and basically turning these historically like Black islands into golf courses and resorts, right? Like, why is there no TV series, no movie about something related to the islands, right? You know, there's all these other places in the United States that are full of really rich histories, and I guess like I was saying earlier, like that are also like complex and really sometimes problematic. And I just want, I personally, for my viewing pleasure and also for my own personal enrichment as, you know, as a person, as a citizen of this country, citizen of the world, just want to be able to know more about the world that I live in. And how can I know more about the world I live in if like y'all just keep showing me New York? If the only creepy person y'all know is Tim Burton, you know, like there has to be more.
There has to be.
I think that's just the answer. Like you have to just, there just has to be more for me personally. I don't know. What are your final thoughts?
I think to echo the sort of some of what you said, but also I think looking forward to, you know, the future of otherness and creepy stuff and weirdos and allowing, you know, all sorts of people. Other than white people, the rest of us can be strange. Right. I think it would be nice to see a little strangeness.
Yeah.
Like a strange person with a tan, at least a little bit more than that on screen would be, I've seen it in a few really small independent films. There was one my mom got me to watch that I thought was a fun movie. And I've seen this actor in something else. I have to try and find it. I think it was called Patty Cakes. It was this white female rapper. I can't remember where it was set, but you know, she's a larger set person. Mm-hmm. And so I think people were like, oh, ha ha, and made fun of her and stuff like that. And she has this friend she makes along the way, this Black actor, and he's got like this Marilyn Manson vibe going on. But she finds, and she has a best friend, like this I want to say an Indian dude. Like it's a diverse mm-hmm. cast. And it's interesting. But my mom, shout out to my mom, she'd be recommending me music and movies all the time. She'd be finding them. And they have diverse stories and casts. Mm-hmm. So the people out there exist. Black people exist in the future. Weird people exist in the future. And the future is as close as tomorrow. So yeah. I would like to see more stuff tomorrow. Because people are out there. They just need to put the, you know, it's king of the hill. You know, people mm-hmm. people want to be on top and stay on top.
I don't know. I don't know. When you said king of the hill, I thought of the cartoon.
Oh.
And I was like, and their numbers being Laotian.
But yeah, even in a show, but it's set in Texas.
Which.
There is still diversity in that neighborhood.
It's in I think in Arlen. Like, how are you not going to have some Asian people in Texas? Come on now. Really? Okay. But, and then Bobby falls in love with, what's, I don't remember her name.
I don't remember. I just, but I know you're talking about.
No, he was in love with her, but, and John, Red, oh, and John Redcorn. Oh my gosh. John Redcorn.
Poor. There's so many, even the, I remember seeing this like video all about the Asian neighbor they had where he's like constantly trying to have this like a assimilation mm-hmm. into American culture. And there's like one episode where he's sort of received, like he calls Hank his best friend all the time, even though they be like
fighting, like he, cats and dogs fighting.
But he appreciates that Hank like treats him
like a person,
as just, yeah, not as though it was a form, but you know, but I'm just saying there's so many forms of diversity in storytelling, and some shows have made attempts. Mm-hmm. But I think we're far past the point of attempts.
You like need you to can, do it. You need to commit.
Yeah, just do it. There's this.
I will say this. I do think like YouTube as a space, or any of these like video platforms where people can upload their own content.
Oh yeah.
Right, has, I think for me, been really interesting as a way of like learning more about the world we live in and like what people are interested in. And of course, yes, mm-hmm. it gets tailored to my own like. How the algorithm tailors things to my own preferences. But like, I came across this one YouTuber who lives in Yakutia, which is in Siberia, a city in Siberia.
Oh.
And it's like apparently the coldest city in the world. It's like negative 95 degrees Fahrenheit there. I can't even imagine what that is. I was like, I can't. But the girl, you know, she just does like these kind of vlog style videos, and she talks about her culture and like the city. And like, I was literally fast, like enthralled by it. And she's, you know, it's just very, not necessarily, it's not generic, but it was just like, just seeing what people do every day. Like, how do you keep your car? Like, people have cars there. Like, how do you keep the car from not dying? And she was saying like, they have to leave their cars on like indefinitely. Like, they can't turn the car off. At all, which is just absolutely wild to me. And the girl was saying that it's really expensive to live there. And at first I was like, really? It's such a harsh environment. But then it's like, yeah, that makes sense because it is such a harsh environment. Like the buildings probably have to be built a certain way to like make sure they're insulated properly. People have heated garages.
Getting goods even sent in, probably.
Yeah, she was saying like a tomato costs $10.
Yep, that makes sense. Cause what the fuck are you growing -95 except frustration?
What can you grow but frustration? She was saying like people go ice fishing, and like the open air market, everything's frozen. Of course, like the fish are all frozen. The bread is like everything's frozen because things just.
Bet you would need a fridge.
You don't. People just set their stuff outside.
Yeah.
Where is our movie about Yakutia? I want to know more. Make a movie. That would be a hard. Can you imagine being on a film crew and filming?
You would have to film that in another. You'd have to film that in Colorado and pretend it was there. There's no way. You because half your equipment would freeze.
Like, can you imagine? Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. And the girl, she was saying, you know, they have to, what else was she saying? Like, you know, they have to dress in layers, of course. Like, you have to put on, like, 6 or 7 layers and no exposed skin, like, except for your eyes. It's just like, you'll freeze. Like, it's wild. I'm like, this is wild.
That's too much.
It's so fascinating. Like, just the fact that people can adapt. People adapt to all kinds of different situations. But Tim Burton don't want to adapt to like the changing world around us and incorporating that in his film. He's still not over suburbia. He's working through some childhood trauma in his movies.
He needs to be done with it.
Yeah, you got to go to counseling, something. Talk to your parents.
I guess
somebody, something. Because
is Dumbo him avoiding it?
You know how I feel about Dumbo and them passing Nico Parker off as a non-white child. I don't know. Because Dumbo is another story about otherness, right? Like the little elf, which also I was like, they was laughing at the little elephant's ears. And I'm like, I don't get why this is a big deal. His ears are big.
Elephants be having big ears.
Yeah. Like, what's the big deal? I don't get it. But okay, I guess y'all making up shit. It's just to show you how people bully you for like little bitty shit that don't even really matter. Like he wasn't even that, like, it wasn't that big deal. He had big ears. So what? Who cares? He's an elephant. He's a baby. He'll grow into them. Maybe. Good Lord. But apparently the real history of Dumbo, because Dumbo was a real elephant named Jumbo, who was really, really big. And they used to get him drunk to like do his performances. You heard me. You can. Marcel's was like lounging. He had to sit up. I'm so serious. Y'all look up the history of Jumbo the elephant. That poor elephant lived a hard life.
Are we live?
We are live. The recording has picked back up. I'm still.
Where? You're telling me. What do they give him?
I think like whiskey. And cigarettes? Did he like cigarettes? I can't remember if he likes. Like,
what is the world that we live in?
Insane. It's just insane in the membrane. Like, who gives an animal alcohol? I mean, he probably needed a lot of it too because he's like, he's huge.
That's what I'm thinking. Mm-mm. Was that in the movie?
No, it sure wasn't. But if Tim Burton probably made his own Dumbo Jumbo related movie that's not affiliated with Disney, I bet he'd have the elephant drinking alcohol in it.
Yep.
He put it in.
He'd have that. He'd have it in there. He put the crows back in.
Oh yeah, the crows would definitely be back in there.
Oh yeah, I can imagine that conversation. So what about the crows? No. We're trying to step away from that, Disney. We're not trying to really lean into that anymore. Are you sure? I thought they were fun. I thought they were really important to the character development. I think we could probably just switch it for something else. Tim, could we have this conversation another time?
Okay.
I'm not upset.
I guess, and on that note, I guess we'll kind of come to an end. We definitely want to thank all of you for listening. Special shout out to our Patreon subscribers, Caitlin T and Jerome C. As we mentioned in the middle of the show, we will be rolling out new loyalty programs on Patreon. So for those of you, so Caitlin and Jerome, you should be receiving something in the mail soon from Patreon in the near future. So make sure you update your shipping address. As for everyone else, you can, it's not too late to become a member or subscriber for of our Patreon. Podcasting is a labor of love. We do it with much love and much gratitude. We enjoy talking to each other. We enjoy interacting with you on our social media as well. But you know, we want to be able to grow our audience, and in order to do that, we need your help. So consider subscribing to our Patreon, share the podcast with friends you might think who will think it's interesting. Let us know what you thought about the episodes. We want to hear from you. As well as follow us, make sure you follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, Patreon. And I believe those are the only ones that we have at this moment in time. We won't do any more platforms until we know y'all bringing in extra people. Okay. Y'all got to bring in, you got to bring a friend. This is the Where I See Me pyramid scheme. Bring a friend. And then that friend brings a friend. And then.
Exactly.
You know? So definitely thank you all to our listeners. We appreciate you. We love you. And if you're on our Patreon, look out for some merch coming up.
This has been a wonderful half drag of Tim Burton. my name is Marcellus.
And I'm Jamie.
Oh wait.
Marcella!
I had one person to thank. I got distracted because I was still angry about Tim Burton. I want to thank our lovely friends, Playdate, for the ending music you are now hearing replay. I probably started playing it and now it's rewinded and we're playing it again. our lovely friends Playdate for Why Don't We Talk About It. They are fans of sci-fi, fun media, and all things quirky, and bump in the night, as we've discussed. Shout out to them. They have new music coming. I've put my ear to the ground. I've heard rumblings. New music on the way. I have been Marcellus.
And I'm Jamie.
Stay nerdy.
And stay black.
Sensational.